Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a young lady who on forums goes by the handle of Black Asian. Black Asian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much for inviting me here.
In case you can't tell, Black Asian is Asian. One of the first things she told me when she was going to come on the air is at one time, Richard said, if there was a Asian female AP, being an Asian female was worth at least $1 million extra dollars. So Black Asian says, I'll be happy to come on the air, but I want to find out what Richard meant because she wants her $1 million. So Richard?
Well, you don't need to do anything extra other than be competent at being an AP. Mm-hmm. What I meant by that is you will get away with so much more than a Caucasian male that, say, a casino, many casinos now will just bar people for winning. So, and it doesn't matter what game you're playing. If you, let's say at X casino, if you win $100,000, they're just going to throw you out no matter what you're doing. If you're, let's say they would throw me out at $100,000. If you're an Asian female in that same casino, you might be able to win $200,000 or $300,000 or $500,000 before they start to say, maybe we should not let her play anymore.
Why is that?
Because of racism. So, yeah.
And a lot of Chinese players, right?
Right. Because there are so many high rolling Chinese, Japanese, Korean players that they, and especially if you're not counting cards. I mean, that's the one thing that they know how to spot. And so they can run you down and say, oh, that person is counting cards. Now, even that, they will probably wait longer to do it because you're an Asian female. But if you're doing something else that's not counting cards, you are going to last so much longer than a white guy.
That's great to know. But one thing I noticed, so far, I haven't felt that advantage yet because I'm playing pretty low limits. But I think I'm sure to see that more when I become a high roller.
Yeah, well, it's harder to measure. I mean, have you had any backoffs yet?
Oh, yes. Yes, a lot.
Okay. Yes. So you are exclusively counting cards, right?
I am exclusively counting cards, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, as I say, that is something that they have learned how to recognize. So, you know, that you are going to get backed off faster doing that than any other form of advantage play that you could make. Okay. And the quicker that you can move past that and move beyond counting, the better it will be.
I see. I'll keep that in mind. One thing I noticed, though, Asian hosts are really good. They are able to give a lot of perks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, yes. And in fact, some of the big properties in Las Vegas, they have something called Asian airfare. And basically, it is just cash up front for you to show up. But you can only get it if you're on an Asian passport or in your case, you would probably be eligible for it even if you have an American passport, but a white guy has no chance of getting it.
Okay. 18 years ago, I was playing at the MGM Grand, and Asian players would get their markers discounted by 20%. So a friend who was born in Hawaii. He was quite American, but he was born in Hawaii and he was Asian. Every trip would take a $100,000 marker.
Wow.
Wow.
And pay it off a month later and play. I mean, he'd be playing $1 million per trip. But he paid off a month later an $80,000.
Wow. And nice work if you can get it.
He did that for a while.
By the way, I should add that racism for other people works too, just not as much. Currently, Asians have kind of the best deal in casinos, but you know, if you're Arab, if you're African American, if you're some other ethnic group, you're going to get more latitude than...
Probably Muslim doesn't work so well these days if there's Republicans.
Oh, if you're from an oil-rich country, if you're in an, you know, you may have trouble getting into the United States, but if you're from an oil-rich country,
maybe
you're going to get some leeway.
All right. So now you're a blackjack player. What was the first gambling game you tried, and have you been a gambler your entire life?
I feel like I've been a gambler all my life for some reason. To tell you a little bit about my family, I heard that my father was a big poker player in Korea. Like, he would go to, like, these big games, like, I don't know, some underground, and lost a lot of money. I don't know if it's true, but that made me think that I probably have the gambling genes. Also, like, I don't see blackjack as gambling, but when I play something other than get blackjack in casinos, like, I'm totally gambler. Like, I know.
So
it's,
you'll play other games in casinos where you have negative expectation?
Yeah, just
still
for fun. Yeah.
It's weird. Oh man, that's right? Terrible. You
it's
have
terrible.
To stop that.
Yes. Usually when I have, you know, free
that
money.
$1 million you're gonna make just went out
I
the
know,
door.
I know.
So how did you get interested in counting cards? How did that happen?
So the first time that I learned about blackjack is through Vagabond, who was on your podcast a while ago.
Yes.
We met in Mexico during some international investment conference. And I remember this is like really, I don't know if he remembered, but I remember the scene that actually he actually shared about his, you know, blackjack story. And we are, you know, some of us were hanging out in the beach, and Vagabond came like late in the afternoon, and he was like, you know, I play blackjack, you know, I wake up late, and you know, I go to casinos and make lots of money. He didn't say it in a very like in a conceited way, you know him, but I thought he was really cool. So that's how I found out about blackjack.
And what did you do then? Did you decide, oh, I'll buy a book, or how did you proceed from there?
So after Mexico, I actually lived in Colombia for a while, and I kept in touch with Vagabond, and I asked him, you know, look, I'm interested in, you know, what you're doing. What can I do? And he told me to read this book, Blackjack Blue Book.
Blueprint?
Blackjack
Blueprint?
Blueprint?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, that's a very good beginning book. One of the ones I recommend to people.
Yes. I don't think their counting system was high-low. I think it was something else. Yeah, anyway, that's the first time I learned about blackjack. And Colombia, as you may know, they have, you know, early surrender. So it's pretty good game.
So you got the book.
Yes.
And you just trained yourself.
Yes.
How to count.
Yes.
And so you started playing in Colombia?
Yes, in Colombia. We had three casinos in the town that I was living. And, you know, I would just, like, go out, you know, at night, you know, play a couple of, you know, 30 minutes, an hour until I make $50. $50, $100, you know, I get so excited. Yay, I made grocery money. I'm going home.
And how did you then take it to the next level?
I knew how well Vagabond was doing, you know. It was very inspiring to me that he could do that. So we played together in a couple of different countries, and I saw.
Oh, where did you go?
Some Caribbean island, and uh-huh. Colombia, and there was another country I don't remember, but yes.
So for our listeners who haven't heard the shows with Vagabond, he travels all over the world. He's been to, I don't know, over 100 countries something.
Yes. He gave me the list of the countries that he's going to visit. He has all the his trips all planned out.
I see. And so now, was he having you bet money for him, or you were just playing on your own but on the same trip?
I was betting my money, and I think it was good just to watch him play. Yes, I saw him, you know, having fun. He drinks, you know, here and there, and you know, it was fun.
He's a cute guy.
He's a very cute, and you know, he's a really good guy too. Yes.
Yeah. He's married though, so
yes.
But now, so at some point, you went to Blackjack Boot Camp.
Yes. So
it's Colin Jones.
It's Colin
Blackjack Apprenticeship.
Yes. Hi, Colin. So we are playing in Colombia and some countries, and I had, you know, like, I think the biggest win I had was about, like, you know, 500, not more than that, and I had bigger losses, and I saw that working, but I was not and I knew that I was counting correctly, but I was not a winning player. So I talked to Colin, and back then I was living in Serbia. So it was
Serbia.
Yes.
Boy, you get around. So you've lived all over the world. Huh?
Not like Vagabond, but I like going, checking out different places. And in Serbia, and you know, Colin was come out, you know, we're going to test you out and see how you do. And so we flew from Serbia to Vegas.
It's a long trip.
It was a very long trip, like through Germany and Mexico, and yeah. And that boot camp changed.
He tested you to start with, right?
Yes.
And how did you do on the first test?
I asked him, you know, did I pass? And he said, close.
Close means no.
Yeah, very close. I think he said very close, but... Yes.
Okay. So you went through the boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And how long ago was that?
I think it was August 2017.
Okay. And now at some point, though, you have a whole nother career and you live in the United States now?
For now, yes.
For now.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Yes. So you're an attorney.
Yes.
So... I'm assuming that means you had to go to law school in the U.S.?
Yes.
And pass the bar, obviously.
Yes. Just thinking about the process gives me headache.
So, okay, because you seem young and you seem to have done a lot and been a lot of places. So, okay. All right, so in 2017, now you went through the boot camp. Now did you step up your game at that point?
Yes, because I decided to move to Vegas. So we came back to the States in November 2017, and I started playing. Should I tell you how much I started with, or it's kind of funny?
Sure. Yeah.
So my initial bankroll was $3,000.
Uh-huh.
It's considered pretty low, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. But... My thing is, you know, I told you that I traded, you know, stocks, you know, options before too. I like, having a small bankroll and, you know, grow and, you know, see how it goes instead of, you know, putting a lot of money.
You don't like risk?
No, I like risk. I think maybe
she
I
wants
don't
to
trust...
prove to herself that it works before she jumps in with both feet.
I think that's it. Yes. Yes. And 10,000 is a lot of money. So 3,000, I started with 3,000.
Within a few years, you'll be making bets of $10,000.
I would love to see that happen. Yes. So I started with 3,000. And the way I played is I would jump around Vegas casinos. Like, you know, I make, you know, $100, $200, and I go to another casinos and, you know, make another $100, $200. I do that, like, some days I would do, like, you know, like 10 casinos a day. But it's a very short trip.
So hit and run.
Hit and run, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you mentioned you had a bunch of back-offs. Were those mostly in Las Vegas?
In the beginning, because the way that I played hit and run, I didn't get backed off. But I'm backed off from most of casinos in Vegas now.
Yeah. Vegas is, I'm sure you've discovered, is probably the worst place for card counters in the U.S.
Right.
So they are the fastest to pick people off. Yes. So
Utah isn't very good for card counters.
Yes.
Utah.
That's true. Yeah.
Make a note.
Yeah.
Actually, there's no casinos in Utah. It was a private joke.
Okay.
One of the things you told us before the interview today was that in one country, you and your partner are married, but in the United States, you're not married. Now, I think that's fascinating. So how did that work?
It was marriage for convenience because I wanted a visa and my partner had citizenship. So by marrying him, I could have get a resident visa. And we really liked the country. And we wanted to stay there a long time.
So he is your boyfriend partner, and you live together here, but you're not married here.
No.
Unless you go back to that country, then you're married.
We are. For now, we are, yes. I don't know. We might divorce, but...
Now, is he also a player?
He tried. I think he want to try again later.
So,
we played in different countries together, but in U.S. we didn't do it mostly because we don't want to be too recognizable.
Oh, you mean playing together?
Yes.
You might be too recognizable.
Yes,
I see.
Yes.
And so, but obviously he likes this idea and is very supportive of it.
Well, you know, there are times that, you know. I'm ashamed to admit, like, you know, after I lose a few thousand or like over 20,000 a day, you know, I go home and cry.
So wait a minute. If you lose 20,000 in a day, obviously your $3,000 bankroll has grown considerably.
Yes.
So how did that progression go? So you went from 3,000 to what?
So the way I was playing in Vegas, I was able to make 10,000, I think roughly in a matter of month. And I had a friend, Spartan. I don't know if he recorded a podcast with you yet.
No, he hasn't been on the show.
Okay.
We may recruit him, but.
Yeah. He's a really, he's a great blackjack player. And he saw that I had some potential and he bankrolled me, and trained me. He put his 10,000, we combined our money, and I raised the bets. And luckily, I was doing good with his guidance, and we kept growing the bankroll.
And how far did you get?
The exact amount?
Well, I mean, over six figures?
Including the truck I told you about, it was at some point it was over six figures.
Wait, you won a truck?
Yes.
How did you win a truck?
It's really not that hard.
It's not that hard. You just keep playing blackjack, you know, get players points, and I'm pretty sure that I was the only, like, 80% of entries were mine.
Okay, so you won a truck.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
It is good.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So are you driving a truck now?
I took cash.
You took cash.
Yes. I regret. It would be nice to have a truck here.
But now you don't live in Las Vegas anymore.
I do.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Oh.
I live in Las Vegas, but, you know, a lot of my work, I'm a licensed in New York for my work. So my business is... A lot of it is in New York, so I go back and forth.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So Vegas isn't good for you to play anymore.
Right.
And you can't practice law here, so why are you still living here?
I love it. The people are so nice, and the weather is nice. You know, no income tax.
No income tax. Yes. Yeah, that's a big one.
Do you find that your law work and your gambling work is the same kind of brain cells or different part of the brain, or how do you combine the two? They sound different to me.
I like that question because I think about that a lot, and I feel like they're very, very similar, because blackjack is you look for these advantages, you know, small advantages, and you try to maximize. You're an opportunist, trying to take advantage of a situation. And I think being a lawyer, I practice through my own firm. So it's a little different from being in a large law firm. So I see that they are very similar in a way that, you know, I try to find an opportunity where people feel that they are lazy to find a solution, legal solution, or, you know, they have better things to do than, you know, dig into, you know, laws. And, you know, I do my work and I sell it. So it's kind of an opportunist.
What kind of law do you do?
I do estate planning and business.
I see.
Yes.
And, well, also, you said you were trading options before, too, which is also very much the same kind of thing.
Yes.
So, have you considered taking the bar in Nevada, or you don't want to practice here?
I tried, and I didn't pass it. Because I was trying to study for bar exam. Bar exam is very intense. And I tried to do it while I was working, and it didn't work. So, yeah.
And so what is the plan with your AP activities now? What are you...
So right now, I haven't played for 6 months because actually at the end of the year, like, I had a huge loss. I don't think that stopped me from playing, from going out, you know, risking money again, but it definitely affected me in some way. I'm taking a break and I'm focusing on my work now, which is getting like really busy. I don't have a lot of free time, but I'm thinking like around summer. Oh, it's already summer now. You know, like in a month or two, I'm going to try to go out again, you know, play during weekends.
Now, when you play, are you a quiet player? Are you a noisy player?
I'm really loud. I talk constantly. Yes.
Now, I would think that you're a pretty woman. I would think one who talks a lot, people would, they look at you when you're talking, so they would remember you more. Would that would be not so good for your longevity, I would think.
I think I stand out anyway because I'm usually only young Asian woman playing in blackjack tables. Uh-huh. So I just try to, you know, have fun, you know, talking to players, talking to dealers, and, you know, I'm playing here like, you know, 10 hours, 20 hours anyway. So let's just have fun.
Yeah, you mentioned that the big loss really sort of took it out of you.
Right.
I think that the only way to get through that is to put in lots of hours.
Yes, but, absolutely.
Which you haven't done.
Right.
So, and are you still partnering with Spartan?
No, we severed the relationship because... I didn't like the stress of losing other people's money. I'm totally fine losing my money, but...
It doesn't sound like you're all that fine with it.
Well, but wait a minute.
Maybe.
If you look at the total amount, did he wind up making money?
Oh, he's a very happy investor.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
So you're only looking at the last... part of the play,
right? That was my money. That was it was after we didn't work.
Oh, that was after you had severed.
Thank God. Yes.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. It's funny because other people would be saying, "I wish he had had half of it or whatever." But have you considered trying to branch out to other forms of advantage play?
I'm always open to other forms of advantage player.
You just haven't discovered those yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yes. There are a lot of things like to learn, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm still learning. I've been at this for 30 years.
Yeah. Really?
Richard, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, Richard's been at it longer. I suspect he's actually doing this show is a learning experience.
Yep.
The all kinds of people come through here and they talk about an edge they've discovered that I didn't know about.
Mm.
And so a lot of it is I'm never going to get good at it, like just because you can speak Korean and that would help you, I probably am not going to go that route. But all right, so we're talking to Black Asian. We're going to take a brief commercial break. And we're going to come back and talk to her some more.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In July is a $600,000 Mad Money promotion. All month long, there will be two casino-wide progressives going on. The major one must hit between $10,000 and $25,000. And anyone playing when it goes off who doesn't get the main award receives $25 in free play. Smaller progressive runs between $1,000 and $2,500 per day. It is geared to hit approximately three times a day. On both progressives, you're eligible if you have your card inserted and have bet at least $1 in the minute prior to the jackpot being hit. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Faith Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from 6 coins per 10 coins, and the odds increase in your favor as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, and kings and aces, return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that you need an entirely new strategy to play this game.
At one point, you told us you had this really awful experience about the weather in Arizona. What was that all about?
So I actually just started driving when I moved to Vegas last year because I'm from New York City and people don't drive in New York City.
You're from New York City yes. and Colombia and Mexico and Serbia. And
right. yes. Okay. Yes. In Colombia and in Mexico, like you take Uber. So I didn't really know how to drive and, you know, to go to Aliante, which is far up north, like I would take, you know, the local roads instead of, you know, highway. So that's how bad I was in the beginning.
That's a long way to go on local roads.
It's like 30 minutes instead of like 10 minutes, right?
Yeah. Depending on where you're starting.
Yeah, yeah. It's 30 right. minutes by freeway from where I live. But.
Yeah, so when I decided to check out Phoenix, Arizona, there are like a couple of good casinos. And that time I was still not comfortable with driving, but I wanted to go. And I just met with the storms in the middle of the field and there was no car. You know, I couldn't see the front at all. And it was like 2 hours of constant raining and, you know, not being able to see. And, you know, there would like the alerts pop up from cell phones and it would say, please stay alive instead of please stay safe. So I thought, oh my God, something's going to happen.
So did you pull over the side of the road and wait it out or did you keep driving?
That might have been smarter, but I thought I needed to get out because I saw the tornadoes, coming my way. So I thought I just kept driving.
Wow.
Tornadoes.
Yes.
I didn't know they had tornadoes in Arizona.
I don't know if it's tornado, but it's like a huge column of, you know, clouds.
That sounds like a tornado.
It does.
Yeah.
So did you live or did you? No, I won't ask that question.
I survived.
Now,
and how was Arizona?
I love the games. Yes. And it's really good, friendly people. Yes.
There you go. So you have to go back. Wouldn't recommend it in July and August. But
right.
Yeah, the people in Phoenix come to Vegas in August to cool off. The Now, we've been told by several people that the I-40, which is the highway that goes across northern Arizona, mm-hmm. people get stopped by the highway patrol and get their money confiscated.
Oh.
Did you have any issues with civil forfeitures or anything like that?
No, I didn't. When I drive or when I fly, I don't know if it helps, but I wear a belt with cash. So I that belt I can carry like 30,000, 40,000. So
unless they do a strip search, they're not going to find it.
No.
Actually, you know, just this is a little bit off topic, but the people that we've had on the show, or the people that I've talked to about these civil forfeitures, they always ask, you don't mind if we search your car, right? I cannot remember a single one where the police actually frisked them and searched their person. They always end up finding the money in the car. So having it on your person in a money belt may be the safest place to have it.
Right. Sorry, I don't remember criminal laws. I don't know when you can, you know, search and frisk.
Oh,
but I think you should have like
they do
reasonable.
It illegally, yeah, so, yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter what the law is; they're gonna do what they want. So.
And they take money.
Yeah, they take it. They confiscate it, and then it's up to you to prove that you're not a drug dealer to get the money back. And in all the cases I'm familiar with, they have got the money back, but they ended up having to spend money on legal fees to get it.
And great stress and uncertainty.
Yeah.
But you do travel with money. Have you had any problems traveling with money?
Surprisingly, not yet. Like, I learned how to pack it so it doesn't show in the machines, and I have the TSA free.
Oh, that's
yes.
Highly recommended. Anybody who travels, get Global Entry Visa.
Yes,
and which comes with TSA free included in that. And well worth the. Well, it's even free if you have certain credit cards.
Yes. It's funny, after I passed the security, and I always put that my money belt back, so I never leave my money in the airplane alone when I just walk away and those things.
Yeah.
But you do take off the belt to put it through the
yes.
Yeah, because with the scanners now it shows up in the scanner. So you
the body scan, right?
Yeah, the body scan. Yeah. So have you gone to Korea yet to play?
No, I want to hear your stories playing there.
Well, I mean, first of all, that just seems like a natural, like that should be a place for you to go, right? I mean,
yes, it's very far.
Yes.
Yes.
But
yes, but I'm definitely planning to go there, and also
not as far as Serbia.
Serbia.
I don't know. Is that true?
It's like 14 hours flight to
That's
Seoul.
About what it is to Korea. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of good places? Still?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been there in many, many years.
Right.
I'm officially retired. So,
right.
I have no idea. Although I do know some people who were playing there as of a couple of years ago. So,
I was going to say, you know, we should go together and, you know, see if they're... Yeah.
Yeah.
I speak the language.
It seems like a place where...
Right.
I'm just surprised with as much traveling as you've done
that
wasn't one of the places you've played.
Do Korean nationals get to play in Korea?
No, but...
I have a U.S. passport.
Yeah. Which is not good, but you can speak and, you know, all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you would do well there. Although
she,
I don't know what the games are.
But she speaks like a native. Would they challenge her right to play?
No. Well, sometimes you have to show your passport to get in. But... I don't know. I mean, you'd have to see, and things have changed, I'm sure, since I've been there, and so.
Yes, I definitely want to play in Korea at some point, and they're building casinos in Japan too, right?
Well, they've been talking about that for 30 years,
right.
But eventually it looks like that'll happen, but it won't be anytime soon.
Okay.
But there are the casinos in Singapore and Macau and yes. Genting Highlands.
So you've mentioned Vagabond and Spartan, who are quite successful at what they do. Yes. And you know other strong players. So what personality traits do you have that makes you like them, or what makes you different from them?
I love my counter player friends because they're really nice people.
Mm-hmm. So are the radio hosts. They're just really great guys.
Yeah, so are the radio, yes. I don't know. You can tell me your opinion, but I think a few things that I notice about them is they're just humble. Because they know, you know, they can, you know, there's, you know, win, but there's also loss. So they're, you know, really good, you know, with that. Also, there are people who value freedom over paychecks. And I think I respect, you know, that attitude. And I like them. I like hanging out with them.
I'm not so sure about the humility part of it. I remember back when I was playing backgammon at the Cavendish in Los Angeles, the people who played there regularly had a superior to you attitude.
Really?
That they would go around, and humble was not the word that you would describe. I'm sure Mayfair in New York.
Well, that was definitely true of the players in Chicago, but that's backgammon.
Did not, you know, if you were good enough to win at backgammon, then you were not humble.
Yeah, but you know, if you think about the people at the blackjack ball, they're pretty humble people. I mean, all the way from Ed Thorpe on down, you know, there aren't. I mean, I can think of one or two who.
I think, you know.
Yeah, I would not call Max Rubin humble.
now, but compared Max to Rubin poker
is
players.
A showman and yeah. Love him to death. Yeah. And he's a showman and not so much. Humility is not the top word I would use for him. And in no way critical. It's just that. But Ed Thorpe, yeah, Ed Thorpe is an amazing, humble guy. Now, speaking of Ed Thorpe, you traded options.
Yes.
So did Ed Thorpe. You play blackjack. So did Ed Thorpe. Are you a big fan of his?
I love his work. I read his book, The A Man for All Markets. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. As soon as it came out. And I mean, he basically invented the counting system, and he did the same in the option market. He invented, he kind of came up with the pricing system before
Black-Scholes.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. So, that kind of things, you know, just, you know, using your, you know, skills and knowledge to invent something, you know, like that. I have great respect for it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a hero of mine.
Yes.
Yes. I for a while, I was, after I sat next to him at the blackjack, I actually sat next to his wife at the blackjack ball. I was going around and said, oh, yeah, when I was having dinner with Ed Thorpe the other night, I was pretty obnoxious for a while there, but it was I admire that man a lot. Now, how long can you play? Can you play 10 hours straight or more? Or what?
My longest session was I tried to play long sessions because I wanted.
Originally, you started out hitting and running, and now you're trying to play long sessions.
So I see like. I see blackjack as my trade. So when I play, like I'm trading. So whether it's a hit and run, whether I play long session, to me it's the same because I have this unit that I consider as a one trade, and hit and run was one trade. When I do long sessions, it was multiple trades.
I see. So you want to put in a certain number of hours for the day, mm-hmm. whether it's many hit and run sessions or one long session. Is that right? Is it?
So the one unit of one trade that I consider is it comes from my trading. I limit upside, but I don't limit downside. I don't have stop loss.
Right. No, so, well, that makes sense because the casino allows you to play a lot longer when you're losing and less time when you're winning.
Right.
So.
Right. But I play long sessions when I'm losing because I think, you know, if I'm expecting to win around 60%, 70%, right? So in that range, I'm thinking even if it's losing a little bit, it can come back. So I play until I win. I play no matter how long it is. I play until I reach that win. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get it. Although I don't think you're going to win 70% of your sessions, but
60, I would say like close to 60. So sometimes I reach that goal like within 5 minutes, and sometimes it's a 30 hours session.
Wait, you sit at a table for 30 hours?
Yes.
30 hours.
Yes. 30. I believe it was like 32 hours, 31 hours or something.
Holy crap. And
she might be younger than us.
Yeah. And I mean, you feel like you're still playing competently after?
I think so. But there's no way that I can verify that I was playing correctly.
It seems like you might have somebody come count you down after you're 20 hours into a session or something. That, I mean, that is an incredibly long session.
Yes, I was surprised that I could do it. Like, you know, I was completely alert and I was counting and I was not tired. I was not on any drug. I eat healthy though. I eat very healthy even if when I'm on the road. That helps.
I do have one friend who does those kind of ridiculous marathon sessions. We call him the vampire because he never sleeps. And but I mean, I have no hope. I would have no hope of doing. And I had to, you know, tell him that after playing 8 hours on one shift and 8 hours on another shift, that I was done for the day. That 16 hours a day was my limit. But even that, I don't like playing those kind of.
But when you were in your 20s and 30s, it was not that big of a deal.
You know, for me, I was never one of those marathon players. I mean, I remember having a 24-hour backgammon session once, and it was not worth the wear and tear on my body. It just, I was never a marathon player like that.
Now, she mentioned her strategy. I kind of would like to know what your thoughts on that, Richard, because she asked for some, before the show, she asked for some advice from us. Now, so her strategy is to play until she's up $300 or whatever her unit is, and then she leaves. Most APs don't play like that.
Right. I mean, if you can actually be competent, I think it's a great strategy, and you don't mind the brutal wear it has on your body. And there are a lot of studies now about how important sleep is and how bad it is to stay up those kind of hours. But it's actually a great strategy because you look so much like a degenerate.
Yes.
And when you win, there's nothing for the casino really to look at because you're gone so quickly. Whereas if you get in a hole and dig your way out to even, well, nobody's going to question that. So, yeah, if you can handle it, I think it's a great way to go.
Thank you. That's good. I mean, the reason I did a hit and run in Vegas was because Vegas is just, you know, it's a sweaty place. But
when you go back out, are you planning to go outside Vegas, to play other places?
Vegas, I have Golden Nugget. And Caesars, for some reason, I haven't been backed off. I think it's because I just keep losing there.
That's a good secret.
Yes.
That works.
Yeah, well, but the other thing you have to do is you have to start, you know, doing more than just count cards.
And yes. How do I find those opportunities?
Well, I'm surprised Vagabond hasn't, you know, given you some help in that direction, but.
Yes, Vagabond would be a good source.
He knows other good sources. Okay.
So once you have proven yourself to be competent enough that you are worthy of his help, I'm pretty sure you'll get quite a bit of information.
I will ask him.
Yeah.
There was a man on this show recently named, we called him It's Not a Fluke. And he partners with Vagabond, and he has his own information that he just might share with you. But so you have...
I mean, the other thing is, if I were still playing, you know, I would think there'd be a lot of people who would want you to BP for them, you know.
Oh, because of my advantage as
because of your superpower.
$1 million advantage.
Yes. Yes, you would make a very good BP.
And also, I can play very long hours. They're like that, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, actually, we had, when we were playing in Korea, we used Japanese big players to win the money for us. And we had an all-star big player, this guy named Rocky, who could just play forever. And, you know, I would go play an eight-hour shift. One of my teammates would come in and tap me out, and he would play another eight-hour shift, and Rocky was fine to just keep going. I mean, he was like you. Yes. He could play 24, 36. Now, he didn't have to do anything, I mean, other than follow signals. Mm-hmm. So,
I think that's why I suspect that I'm a gambler, because I get too excited when there's money on the table.
I have to say that doesn't speak in your favor. Yes. People who might say, oh, she'd be a great BP, when they hear you say, oh, I like to gamble with where I don't have an edge, they're like, well, maybe not.
No, that's only when I get the free coupons and the small money, right. Not like, you know, like big money that I play in blackjack.
Oh, yeah, free play coupons, you always go ahead and knock yourself out.
Yeah, actually, we... we used a big player one time who was loosely related to me, and we were playing at a place in Vegas where he was betting like $2,000 a hand. And then after we had finished our play, and he's staying, you know, on a big comp and a suite, and that night he went down to gamble with his own money because, he liked to gamble. And he was down in the same casino betting nickels. And because, you know, he didn't have a lot of money. And we had to tell him, look, you can't do this. You can't. I mean, I guess it made him look like a degenerate that he'd be betting $2,000 at one point and $5 at another. But
I do the same thing. I get so excited about the $5 bet in the, you know, roulette table.
Yeah. It's a habit you have to break.
Okay.
You had another story, Richard, about one of your BPs made a lot of money, but then went and played craps and lost basically the same amount or more. And as far as your team members were concerned, the craps was not part of the deal. As far as he was concerned, it was.
This has happened more than once where you recruit a very wealthy big player, which is great to have because the casinos know them and know they're big losers. Right. So they're the perfect big players. Mm-hmm. But, more than once this has happened where they BP for somebody, they win a lot of money, and then they go blow it doing something else. And in their mind, they're even. So, you know, it leads to big arguments. And you just you have to try to make it really, really clear. But our experience with using big players like that is they're so hard to work with. A, because usually they're very wealthy individuals who are used to running things their own way. Maybe they own businesses or whatever, and they're not used to taking direction from other people. Mm-hmm. And trying to corral them is often like trying to herd cats. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to make that work.
I see. So you're saying I thought it was okay just to be an AP and blackjack or whatever plays that I'm doing, but just get rid of that gambling.
Yes, attitude. Get rid of that gambling. Yes, yeah.
Completely.
Yeah, completely. Okay. Unless you have an itch. Yeah.
Right.
No gambling without an itch.
Absolutely.
That would make the name of a radio show. It's funny. Here when, when I went on the Wizard of Vegas forum, there was a guy who posted under the name of GWAE, which to me means gambling with an itch.
Yeah, right.
And so he had the Wizard of Vegas forum is Michael Shackelford, who was co-host of this radio program. So the guy took the name, to him it stood for gambling without an itch. And so it never occurred to him that it was the same initials until after he had used it quite a bit.
No more gambling without an itch. Yes.
Right.
Now, and can you take direction? In other words, you're an attorney. You're a smart lady. So they go, and you're right, you bet $10,000 a hand, and you do what we tell you to, no using your brain. Can you do that?
If there is a reason, yes. If there's there are rules that I see no reason to follow, I tend to not
I think that's exactly why a lot of people end up in gambling, professional gambling, right. Is because they end up with bosses telling them stupid things to do.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's a certain personality that just doesn't want to listen to that when they know something is stupid. But, yeah, but if you know that the people, I mean, so I had a BP one time. Let me figure out how I can tell this story. I had a BP who's a very famous professional gambler, but we were doing something that he was not familiar with. It was something brand new to him, but I recruited him to BP for us. And we had been doing this particular thing for years, and we're very good at it. So we recruited him, and we explained that when you come to the table, you need to wade into the game, right? You need to bet small in the beginning, bet $200 or $300. And we had some pretty simple signals, how to hit stand double down split, which were not normal plays, and we had two bets, small bet or big bet, right? So we told him, bet $200, and if we tell you big bet, bet $400. And we'll ease into this and see how it goes, and how, because dealers can suddenly clam up when the money hits and things can happen. So bet $200, bet $400. So he comes into the table, and he bets $200, and he bets $200, and we give him big bet, and he bets $5,000. And
that was not an instruction.
No, he was supposed to bet $400. Right. Instead, he bet $5,000. And so, you know, we're trying to signal him not to be doing this, and the dealer immediately shut down, and the game was no good after that, right? And we called the play, and before that happened, actually, we played for a little bit of time, and he started doing the opposite of what we were telling him to do. And then we just shut the play down and went back to the room to discuss. And, you know, and he said, well, you know, I knew I had this massive edge, so I wanted to bet $5,000. And we're like, we told you that you need to wade into the game, you know? And then when he started doing everything the opposite of what we were telling him to do, he was like, well, I was seeing that it wasn't working what you were doing. And so I figured, and he had this explanation for why he was doing things the opposite of what we were doing, we were telling him. And we were like, you have never done this before. This is your first time. We've been doing it for years, and you're just going to take over the play and make these decisions for yourself? Obviously, that was the last we worked with him.
But I'm surprised that it's even an issue. Like,
well,
when
you know, some people, you can work with some people, and some people you can't, you know.
Well, see, now...
I mean, that's the bottom line. When Bob asks you, can you take direction and do what you're told to do?
Right.
I mean, that is really what you want in a big player, is someone who will just do exactly what they're told.
I mean, you cannot do accounting if you are not ready to follow the rules, right?
Right, right. But in this case...
It's a BP.
Sometimes you don't know what the rules
are. Right.
You know, you have to just trust the people that you're with that they're competent and know what they're doing.
Right.
And some people are not able to do that.
Yeah, like if you... Now, Rich is not hiring BPs these days.
But really? I can't apply?
Oh, I'm retired.
But if he were and considered him, you have this enormous amount of respect for Richard. And so you are going to follow his instructions. Even though they don't seem right, you know, he's a pretty sharp cookie. Not everybody has that opinion of Richard.
Right. Yeah. Or they have a much higher opinion of themselves.
So. They do.
Yeah. I'll follow your instruction 100%.
All right. So another reason to come out of retirement.
Yeah, there you go.
You haven't done that for almost 4 months now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I keep getting emails, people asking, was Richard in Oklahoma recently? And I go, I don't know. If he was, he didn't tell me.
If you don't mind me asking, why did you retire?
retiring is easy. I've done it dozens of times. I don't know. I'm just doing other things. I mean, I don't need the money at this point.
Yes.
And I'm kind of pursuing other things that I'm having fun with. And,
yes.
That's why.
Right.
The smoke in the casinos bothers me.
Yes. I wear a mask when somebody smokes.
Yeah. Yeah. Although you probably shouldn't say that because now, you know, surveillance people might be looking for it.
Very good. We've been talking to Black Asian, having a lot of fun about her. She's early in her AP career, has done well so far, and we wish her continued success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.